All right, let's get our Bibles and let's turn them to Acts chapter 16. So Acts chapter 16, and we'll be looking at verses 35 through the end of the chapter. We'll actually touch on just a little bit of chapter 17, verse 1, just to sort of transition us to the next place of ministry. So that's Acts 16, and we'll pick up looking at verses 35 through the first half of verse 1 of chapter 17, just to sort of show the flow there of the journey, but more on that later. So I'll give you can refer to if you want to. We won't really use the handout to, this evening, except for I am going to reference the map later towards the end, just to show the transition for next week. But I'll give you the outline in just a minute. And then I tried to plan this so that you'd have some time for questions and answers at the end. Since we'll be at the end of the study of where he visits Philippi, we'll have some time, I think, built in so you can ask your questions before we move to the next piece next week. But before we do that, you know what we start off with, right? Well, not always, but trivia. Okay? All right. Whoever gets it right gets to stay in the heat. Whoever misses goes out in the cold, which would be in my office. No, I'm kidding. Well, not about the cold, but the relocation is not the true. All right, so here's one, just to get your minds thinking, not necessarily right or wrong, meaning don't get worried if you don't know it. What was the first miracle performed by Jesus and the chapter and the book that it's in?
1 John 2.
Other than Dave, somebody want to answer?
That's a good answer.
Linda agreed with that one. So yes, it's water is turned into wine, or water is turned into, well, we call it grape juice, right? It was Welch's.
Right.
And it's in John chapter 2, the first of how many signs?
Seven.
Yep. Very good. Good, Gene. That's right. First one. All right. Let me give you the outline for tonight. As we wrap up this visit that the team, obviously, but Paul for short, is on. So what we'll do is we'll review just a little bit, and then we'll look at verses 35 through 36 when morning comes, not in sorrow, but in terms of the morning. So when morning comes, verses 35 through 36. And then we'll look at a pretty interesting section, and it's verses 37 through 40. A dignified departure, that's all I'll say about it. It's an interesting section there. We'll look at that, and that's probably where we'll spend most of our time in that section there. It's not a lot of verses, obviously, 37 through 40, but Paul's not going to just up and leave, okay? So he takes care of a few things. And then the last thing we'll look at is on the way to Thessalonica. That's chapter 17 and the first portion of the verse. I just want us to see where he goes next, and that'll connect us to what we look at next week. So in your mind, Paul has left, he has gone into Europe, he's in Philippi, and then he's going to go to the next place, which is Thessalonica, which we'll look at more next week, but just so you can see a couple of things I'll point out for that. So before we read verses 35 through 36, you don't necessarily need the handout at this point. I'm sure you probably remember, but just so we remember where we're at, the context, just at a base level. So the book of Acts, I said, largely shows from Pentecost to Rome, the gospel being spread and taken to Rome, if you will. By the time you get to the end of the book of Acts, Paul is there. So it shows that trajectory. Now, we've studied the first missionary journey before, but on the second one, Paul wants to go back. If you remember, his initial purpose was to go back and to strengthen those churches. So if you connect A to B, A being the first missionary journey. So Paul sets out, he has these churches established, goes back, and that journey lasts for anywhere from 2 to 3 years, roughly, thereabouts, we'll say. Paul goes back, he ministers, and then he feels like it's time to go back and to strengthen the churches, but the Lord had other plans, didn't he? So Paul sets out initially, and then the Lord tells him to go roughly where? Does anybody remember? Europe. there's other ways to say it, same thing. So just remember, he had his mind on what he thought he was going to do. The Lord changed it, and he was immediately obedient. And so we see where the Lord's plans was to take the gospel into Europe. Of course, the question someone asked me was, well, does Paul ever go back? Is there ever any other additional missionaries? Yes, you know that there would be, because there's other churches. You think of the seven churches of Revelation. In other words, ministry will still go on there where Paul was originally planning to go. It's just that for this purpose, for this trip, it was to take the gospel into Europe. And that's the easy way to remember the second missionary journey. So he goes and he ends up in Philippi, and openness was to the word of God, but then we saw, remember, there was opposition to it. I'll remind you of something, and you'll see it throughout the journey. The second one, when the word of God is preached, taught, delivered, brought, whatever term you want to use, something invariably always happens after it. And it is what? Opposition, or whatever the case is. And that's still the case today. So Paul overcomes the demonic, demon-possessed girl. He does that, of course, in the name of Jesus. Now, were the owners happy of the girl, with the girl, the girl that was demon-possessed, or were they upset? What were they mostly upset about? It's all about the green, isn't it? Or in that case, the denarii or the Roman coins and stuff. But yeah, money makes you do crazy things. And so then the missionaries, where do they spend one night? Was it in the Motel 6, the Hampton Inn? No, they went to jail. They didn't stay in the hotel, did they?
Well, that's the Grey Bar Hotel.
What's the, oh, yes, that's a good, yeah. Yeah, that is very, that is a good way to remember it. But they were delivered, weren't they? What did they do, though, while they were in prison, roughly? Yeah. I mention that again because it's a real-world example of what we read, like, for instance, in Philippians. What is Philippians? Philippians talks about rejoicing in the Lord when everything's going well or at all times. And that's a pretty good example of all times, because we probably wouldn't do that. I would like to think that I would, but I won't stand here and say that I'm positive I would. I would like to. Good reminder just to make sure we rejoice in the Lord even when things are difficult. And we talked about our witness, because our witness, I think, a lot of times gets destroyed, because then when things are bad, our faith really gets put to the test, doesn't it? And if we fail the test, not always a good witness. But anyway, we'll move on. So the story, though, isn't quite over. So Paul has delivered the good news, if you remember, to the jailer and the household and that sort of thing. They come to the Lord and he's hospitable and so forth. But one of the things I want you to see here is there's a couple of threads that go through this, but one in particular is you'll see how much Paul really loves these believers. Now remember, this is a very primitive, in other words, you don't have a lot of people. I mean, you only have Lydia and the small handful there in Philippi. But he's going to show how much he does care for these early Christians, in other words, this small group, because it would be easy just to leave, wouldn't it? I mean, he's gotten out of prison, let's just get out of town quickly, but he doesn't quite do this. Let's someone read verses 35 through 36. So imagine, before Gene reads it, remember last week, Paul's been delivered out of the jail. The jailer was going to kill himself. Paul helps with that, comes to Christ, so forth. He gives hospitality, and then what happens when the morning comes? Gene?
Now when day came, therefore come out now and go in peace.
All right. Thank you, Gene. All right. So when morning comes, you see the flow of this, and this is pretty straightforward here. So when the morning comes, you have the chief magistrates, and they send the police, and now is the time, and they're going to release, of course, Paul. Too late, right? A little too late there. I think the earthquake took care of releasing them more than the magistrates. And it says to release them. And then the jailer goes and he sends him and then tells them to leave, that they have been released. It's almost kind of funny, though, but and I'll explain a little bit in a second. And he tells them to go in peace. I mentioned the peace, P-E-A-C-E, for a minute. This is, if you want to think about this, in the Gospels, in particular, you see this in the book of Acts. That was what's called the Pax Romana. That's Roman peace. It's a fancy word for it. A lot of times they would tolerate religions, as long as they didn't destroy the Roman peace. It was a faux peace. It's not peace like what you and I think with Christ. It was a fake peace. But any time that peace was destroyed was typically what would happen there. But they're supposed to be released there, and he's told to go. The idea, if you think about it, from the magistrate's standpoint, I figure that they're thinking to themselves, if we just beat the tar out of them, throw them into prison, that will be enough, and then when they get released, they'll get out of here. Right? And probably to some extent that'd be true, wouldn't it? I mean, you would think. That's why I said that. You just remember, he's not just leaving. There's really two things in particular. They sort of overlap. But Paul's got to take care of a few things. Because I want you to think about this. Paul, yes, he wants a dignified departure. But I want you to think, if Paul just leaves and you have, well, just for argument's sake, say a handful or two, you don't have a lot of believers yet. Would it be possible that persecution would be a pattern to persecute those Christians? Mm-hmm. Someone read, this is a little not longer, but it's a little bit more, and it's just the rest of the chapter, but it's 37 through 40. We're going to look at this piece. Because this piece, some people read this and they're like, man, Paul, he got up on the wrong side of the jail floor and he's in a bad mood, and you're sort of missing the point. Okay? Would someone read 37 through 40 for me? Go ahead, Don.
But Paul said to them, having beaten us in public without trial at the house of Lydia, when they saw the brothers, they encouraged them and left.
All right. Thank you, Don. So as we look at verses 37 through 40, a couple of things that are worth noting. This is the piece we'll spend the bulk of the time with before we see them move on to the next location for next week. Excuse me. But Paul here is noted as a Roman citizen. A lot to unpack here. I'll try to make it as simple as possible. But it's important to remember, so when we read this, sometimes we're thinking, I thought Paul was Jewish. Well, he is. But Paul also, of course, had a Roman citizenship. Just turn real quick, and this is just a cross-reference. I'm just going to skim it. It's Acts 22:28, and then we'll look at this. Because I think it helps a little bit with, I mentioned last week, you know, when the mob comes after him, there's some people say, well, why didn't Paul mention it there? Was he waiting to the very end? And you have to remember how quickly that happens. I mean, when there's a mob, you don't have a lot of time to raise your hand and say, let's do things in an orderly manner, typically. And so I think what happened is when they took Paul, if you remember last week, and the mob came out, I think everything just happened super fast. Paul's then taken into prison, as we know. Paul mentions this citizenship that he has, but I'm just going to read this. It's 22:28. The commander answered, I acquired this citizenship, he's speaking of Rome, Roman citizenship, with a large sum of money, and Paul said, but I was actually born a citizen. So Paul had, not only was he Jewish, but he also had Roman citizenship. Now, at first blush, this is like, well, what's the big deal? Okay, I'm going to read you something, then I want you to rewind, and then let's go back to something that happened when the journey started. Let me just read something to you, though. Paul was born a Roman citizen, which gave him certain rights, including a public hearing. Scourging of any Roman citizen was prohibited by law. The rights of Paul and Silas, that's really what I want you to stop and think about. We're going to look at that in just a second. Therefore, had already been violated. Excuse me. So let me stop here and think. So at the end of the first missionary journey, who went with Paul? So we had Paul, Barnabas, and who?
Silas.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't explain it. So Paul, Barnabas, and you had John Mark. Remember? I'm sorry, I explained it wrong. And when the journey was getting ready to start, we had the original team, John Mark and Barnabas. Now, if John Mark had gone, John Mark didn't have Roman citizenship. He was completely Jewish. Isn't it interesting that the Lord had Silas and his ability to serve on that team, because Silas was not only, of course, he had Roman citizenship as well. You tracking here with what I'm saying? If the original team from the first one, Barnabas and John Mark, went, they weren't Roman citizens. They would have been allowed to have been beaten. Does that make sense? Whereas Paul had that Roman citizenship card, if you will, and so did Silas. I think it's fascinating because God not only knew beforehand what was needed, but Silas being on that team ends up being pretty good, doesn't it? If John Mark was there, he didn't have the Roman citizenship card we would think of. When you are a Roman citizen, and Paul is very big on this, he uses the legal rights that he had as a citizen. So stop and think what happened last week. So Paul gets attacked, he and Silas, by a mob. And all of their Roman rights were, of course, violated. And so what happens here is that they should have had a public hearing. Did they have a public hearing? They're not allowed to be beaten. That's against Roman law, and so forth. God knew beforehand, I think, in many ways, where Paul was headed, I've often thought, and he prepared in advance. Silas is a good partner for him. Go ahead, Wanda. Oh, did you have a question? Yeah, he had Roman citizenship.
He was
yeah.
more of a Roman than what the commander was.
Right. Later in the book of Acts. No, that's a good point. Yes, that's true. So just think about it, though. So you have Paul. The Lord. All I really want you to see is the Lord knew beforehand what was needed for this journey.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because we get so fixated on the John Mark Barnabas scenario, and they fight with Paul, right? And before they set off on the journey. But did God know beforehand what was needed for this journey? Think about, and obviously there's no way to know this, but I often think to myself, imagine if John Mark and Paul had just gone together. This would have been a lot different scenario, wasn't it? For Paul, maybe not, but for John Mark, it would not. So it's interesting. And the other thing to remember here is, I mentioned before, I was being a little tongue-in-cheek with it, Paul, a lot of times you'll find some people who will say, Paul's just ornery that day. No, remember, Paul, I think, has tact. I don't think he's doing anything that's unbiblical. But don't forget, Paul's using legal rights that people have. Do you understand? So he's acting in a biblical manner, but he also has certain legal rights. Do you and I have legal rights as United States citizens, at least now? Well, yeah, I was going to say I have to...
We have the illusion.
That used to be a very simple illustration, but let's just humor me. We should have, let me re-preface that, we should have, in theory, certain rights, right?
Yes.
Is there anything wrong with us using those as citizens? Well, no, there's nothing wrong with that. Paul's using those rights for a particular reason, but I think the more important piece is, isn't it amazing that before the journey even starts, having Silas on that team, the Lord knew what was coming, and he prepared in advance. I think it's quite interesting. I'll read you a verse. You don't have to turn. It's in Isaiah 48:17. It says, in Isaiah 48:17, I am the Lord your God who teaches you to benefit you, who leads you in the way you should go. Such an important thing with the book of Acts, because who's guiding Paul? Is Paul, and I know it's the team, but who's leading the team? Is the team leading itself, or is the Lord leading the team and the team's following the Lord? Obviously, it's the latter, right? Now, the obvious question is for you and I, do we do that? I hope so. We need to, right? As this church, what should we be doing? We shouldn't be following Pastor Pace, should we? We should only follow Pastor Pace if he's following the Lord, and we should be following the Lord, right? Same thing. And I just think that's such an important piece. It's easy. Usually, if you read a book on this or a commentary, people get hung up on the fact that Paul's ornery. He's not being ornery. You're missing the point. Paul's using what he has legally, but the Lord also knew that Silas needed to be there. The Lord knew long before that. But let's go on. Let's move on. Because notice back, and it does play into what Wanda was talking about. So let's look at our verses. So, of course, Paul says, you've beaten us and you've told us that, you know, we're men who are Roman, men plural, so it's obviously both of them. But notice verse 38. So the policemen reported these words to the chief magistrates and they weren't worried, were they? Notice what it says. They were afraid when they heard that they were what? Last week, they were accused of being ornery Jews. Remember? So if you go back there to that charge they had, they said they were being ornery Jews. But here you see they're afraid because they have that Roman citizenship. The Lord knew in advance what Paul and the team would need. And of course, that helps with this problem that they have. So of course, the question though is, why does Paul go to all of this, if you will, hoopla? Because he could have just left, couldn't he? I mean, which would have been probably the natural reaction. I may have done that. I would hope not. But Paul and them did not. And I'm going to read you something because you need to remember Lydia and this church group of gatherers, there's not many of them, is it? If Christianity and these Christians, Paul and them, were allowed to do that, what if that set a pattern up? There was some problem with these people. I'm going to read you something. I think it's a helpful thing to consider why Paul doesn't leave right away. I think he wants to have a dignified departure, as I call it. I think he wants to settle some of this right. And it also, in my opinion, I think it opens up the ability for that church to be there. Do you understand when I say church, the believers there? Listen to this. I think it's helpful. It was essential that the young Christian community have a good reputation among the authority for its witness to flourish. Christians broke none of the Roman laws, and so it was important that the magistrates had not acknowledged their innocence and set the record straight. And that's a good way to think of it. Again, if they had just up and left, who was to know what would happen to that small group of believers? But does Paul then leave? Notice he still doesn't leave, does he? When Gene was reading it, notice what it says in verse 40. And so they beg him to leave. Just get out of here. Don't do anything else. But even then, Paul doesn't. And I think it's interesting, and you know, me being a pastor, I can see this, because you notice how much he cares about them. Notice what he does. It says, and I'm going to read this one more time, verse 40. They went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia, and when they saw the brethren, they encouraged them and departed. So again, his focus is on that church, isn't it? I mean, I think there's a lot of pieces at play. I think Paul wanted to be dignified when they left. He wanted to set the record straight, which is the main thing there. I think it would have helped that early church not have that stain on it. But he also wanted to encourage them. I want you to look at a couple of verses with me, and then we'll move on. But I'll just read these. But 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 1. How many of you feel like that our world's discouraging? But when we come together, what should we be doing? And all the other times too. I want you to look at something with me, because Paul gives us a good example. Because Paul has had a rough time in Philippi. He wants to make sure this church, and I use the word church here obviously because it's a body of believers. But let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Oh, yes, I wrote down one, and I was like, oh, I didn't do two ones. Sorry. Yes, that's right. So, sorry about that. 1 Thessalonians 5, not 1, but 11. I wrote it down wrong. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another, build up one another, just as you are also doing. Thank you, Dave. Sorry about that. So, 1 Thessalonians 5, 11. I wrote down 5, 1. But so we're supposed to encourage each other and build each other up and in the Lord. So that's something that Christians are supposed to do, aren't we? When we come to church, we should build each other up. When we're around each other, we should endeavor to do that. Let's look at this other one that I have. It's Hebrews 3:13. Hebrews 3:13. And it's very similar to 1 Thessalonians 5:11, not 1, but 5:11. It's the idea of encouraging one another. But encourage one another day after day, so not just simply on the Lord's day, in other words, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. So here's a different verse on it, but what's the idea? The idea is that we're supposed to gather to encourage one another, shouldn't we? Or even outside the church to encourage one another. And that's something that that's one of the things that Christians should be doing. I think that one of the problems sometimes is we don't probably do that enough, do we? We don't probably encourage one another as much as we should. There's a quote, I thought it was interesting. It says, encouragement is oxygen to the soul. Have you ever been discouraged and you come across a Christian and they do something to encourage you? I have, as a pastor before, had, say, a rough period, and I'll go out to my mailbox and something, I'm not asking you to do this, send me a card. Do you ever have something like that happen and it comes from a brother and sister in Christ? That's what we're supposed to be doing. Do you know what I'm saying? We should be encouraging each other, because the world's filled with discouragement. We don't need to come to church and discourage one another. You know, we need to try to lift each other up, pray for each other. There's plenty of discouragement out in this world. But think about this. Paul has been beaten, humiliated, but before he leaves, he wants to make sure the brethren is encouraged. Shouldn't we do the same? So, is the journey to Europe over? Does Paul quit because it's hard, or does he keep going? He just keeps going and going, doesn't he? Let's look back at chapter 17. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Paul. Yeah, I'm sure they probably thought of Paul with that. Yeah. No, that's a modern-day parallel for sure. Let's go back here. I just want you to, we'll actually look at these verses in detail next week. But really what I want you to notice is a couple of things. You can get I'll show you on the map sort of where we're at. But I want to point out a few things, and then I'll see if you have any questions or comments. But let me just read this one since it's short. Now, this is 1 Thessalonians, Acts chapter 17, verse 1, and he's going to Thessalonica. Now, when they had traveled through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. Now, next week, we'll look at all nine verses, but really, I just want to draw out a few things, and then we'll see if there's any questions. So, on the map, you don't have to go very far. I'm looking at this, obviously, upside down. Look at about where my finger is. It's just a little bit to the west. You don't have to go very far if you find Philippi. They didn't go very far for this one. So that's where that is at. You'll also see where I have mentioned before that you can tell when Luke is there and when Luke has departed. Look at verse 1 that I just read. Now when So he's actually not with them in Thessalonica, whereas, for instance, if you go back to Acts 16, verse 11, so putting out to sea from Troas, we ran a straight course to Samothrace. So if you notice in verse 11, he includes himself, we. What did we do tonight? We gathered for prayer, Bible study, right? What did they do outside? Do you understand? We weren't there. So you can see when Luke is present, and you can see when he isn't present. So for some reason, he either stayed or went some other direction. So I just point that out. Somebody had told me they thought it was interesting. You could see that in the text. You can see when Luke is there and when he's not there. But the main thing is, and they'll meet up again, is that Paul gives us a good example of a word that starts with P, which is perseverance, and despite of difficulty. He remained faithful to the Lord, and he will continue to do so even when things are difficult. Because human tendency, I think, would be to think, man, I mean, we went the first place and it was bad. He quits, right? And Paul doesn't do that, does he? He just keeps going, and he keeps going, as we use the Energizer Bunny example for that. And I think the tendency sometimes is for us to do that. We need to remember that when the Lord calls us to a work, we're called to be faithful to it. We have to learn to trust Him. And you see that because there's a lot of harder paths He's going to go to. And Thessalonica will not be a fun place. And you'll see that even after Thessalonica, he goes to Berea. And after Berea, he goes to Athens. And Paul just won't quit when it would be easy to. thought of three things, and then I'll see if you guys have comments, questions, or need any clarification. But I thought of three things. The Lord's ways and plans are not always, are always best, even when we don't understand them at first. Let me read it again, because I blundered it. The Lord's ways and plans are always best, even when we don't understand them at first. And that's a reference to when the journey was getting ready to start. It started off on what we would think of as a bad note. John Mark didn't go, but Lord knew what was best, which was for Silas to be Paul's friend and partner there. Of course, later Timothy. Two, we need to encourage each other in a world filled with discouragement, and that doesn't require any explanation, I don't think. We see that in the Hebrews and 1 Thessalonians passage. And then three, let us commit to persevering with the Lord's help through difficult situations, because I think that's key. It was certainly the Lord's help, wasn't it, that enabled him to finish, he meaning the whole team, the journey there. So if you want to read what we're going to look at next time, it's chapter 17 where we ended, and it's verses 1 through 9. And if you want to read ahead, I'll go ahead.